Accession number 1647, Major T. Ward, Reel 10.
Major Ward, Reel 10. I think you're saying that the most important work done by the bomber crews at this fluid stage after the Ghazala line dissolved was in actually giving information about the location of enemy units and formations on the ground.
Yes, the observers who had an excellent view in the Boston bomber, they were in the front, in the nose of the aircraft, and with full view all around and down, so as well as up, so they could see everything which was going on. And that's actually where the bombing took place, by the observer. I know this because I did two or three flights with the Boston bombers eventually. And when I went up with the formation, we had to leave the observer behind because there wasn't room for two of us. And so I had to do the bombing. Now that was quite straightforward because I had to bring the target into focus through the sights and just press a button at the appropriate time. And I was very interested because each time they gave me copies of the photographs of my bombing. And it was bombing transport, German transport. So it was interesting to have that experience because when the observers and pilots came back, I knew exactly how they could see all this movement of vehicles and dispersion of vehicles, it was a good experience for me to know how clearly they could see it.
How did you arrange to do that? Was it your suggestion that you should go up to see what it was like, or were you invited by them to fly to?
No, that was Colonel Wilmot's idea.
Who was Colonel Wilmot?
Colonel Wilmot commanded the South African wing, the Bostons, and he cooperated 100% and was very, very enthusiastic about this close support bombing as it was developing. And I have actually, I think, a 10-page report by him on this subject eventually. And it's a very valuable information and report for consideration of how to develop this particular kind of warfare.
Do you know if he was a regular officer or a...
He was a regular officer, yes.
When you went out bombing, roughly what altitude would you be at?
Oh, about 15,000, I would think, the time. But it varied depending if our fighters were in the air and making sure that the bombers were protected and whether that Germans were... we were gradually getting control of the air. This was absolutely vital. Must give the squadrons, the fighter squadrons, the benefit of this because it was absolutely essential that our vehicles were nose to tail on the main road, were not bombed or strafed by the aircraft, Germans. But we must remember that the Baltimores were night bombers went off every evening on a long haul to as far as probably Benghazi or somewhere like that, and bombed the Germans on their own airfields, and with great success in many occasions, as well as the fighters who were actually capturing them in the air, or even going and strafing them on their own airstrips. At this stage, I'd like to just mention that the Germans' lines of communication were being stretched all this time during retreat, which must have been a concern for them, because later we found that the Navy were doing a very valuable job, and with the ships coming over the Mediterranean from Italy or wherever with supplies, probably reinforcements. And in one report I read that 4 out of 5 of these ships were being sunk by the Navy before they reached Benghazi or Tripoli or wherever they were coming. Now that was magnificent. Another thing was that I must remember that the tanks coming forward following our troops needed fuel. That was being destroyed on the way across the Mediterranean, as well as food and ammunition. And I think by the time the Germans, by the time we settled and stopped retreating at El Alamein, the Germans must have reached the stage when they were very worried about their ammunition and fuel, because they'd come a long way from Gazala.
When you went out on the bombing, what sort of bomb load would the Boston carry?
Well, they were carrying 500 pounders or. Yes, usually 500 pounders.
Do you know how many bombs they would carry on a load?
A couple, perhaps, yes. Or, yes.
When you were briefing the pilots before they went out on a
No,
a
they were carrying more than a couple. But more than a couple, but I think it depended what they were going for. Mm. If they wanted to spray transport. I must explain here that German transport were very difficult to bomb because they were wildly scattered. They never grouped their vehicles unless they were moving. That was the time to catch them. But if they were just leaguered and in the backward areas, it was very difficult to get much success from a bombing raid, because you might destroy one or two vehicles, but it wasn't like catching a column on the move.
Did they ever try and drive you off using flak?
Yes, I had experience with the flak. When I went up, it's rather disturbing actually, because there are puffs of smoke in the air, and we actually just one or two when we were flying. The Bostons flew in formation. I was with the leader, who's in the front, and he had a V formation. And leading that, and he actually gave them instructions on when to bomb and so on. So his observer was an important, very important, because he was had to be alert to drop the first bombs.
So you were the lead observer then when you went on these. Mm. How many aircraft would there be in the V?
Seven, I think, in the one we went on. Mm.
Did you ever get interfered with by German fighters?
No, no.
When you did the briefing before they took off on a mission, how did you conduct it? Did you have them in a lecture room with maps, or was it?
Yes, it was in a briefing vehicle. You know, we're very mobile, I had all my maps there marked to date from the information I'd received from Army headquarters. Had them covered in talc, and we used to mark them with red pencil on the talc.
That'd be Chinagraph pencil.
Chinagraph, that's right. Yes, I'd forgotten that name. And of course that moved as the situation moved.
You rubbed out the old and put on the new.
That's right. And of course, briefing them onto a target or vehicles or something, you put a round ring on them on the map, then you're exactly where the situation. And they did it on their map. Mm. We didn't have photographs because, of course, the battle was fluid and of course changing every 5 minutes. And so it was all done by from maps.
Did you have a sort of set format to go through when you did a briefing?
Well, this was, of course, very new to me at this stage. When I went on these bombing raids, I'd had more experience. But
yes.
But in the initial stages, before the 8th Army settled at El Alamein, I was fairly new. So I'd just arrived, hadn't I, from Gazala, and very relieved to be able to do so. And this was new because I was a new ALO, and I hadn't met the South Africans before, but I soon got to know them. They were very friendly indeed. It so happened that their favourite wicket-keeper in cricket was called Tommy Ward, so I was immediately called Tommy Ward, and that was my name. They were very easy to get to know and very hospitable, and I soon became part of their unit. I think we should now perhaps talk about, if I may, El Alamein.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you a bit about the debriefing too.
Oh, the debriefings, yes. Yes.
When they came back from a debriefing, how was that conducted? How did you go about getting information?
Well, I had all the pilots with his observer in at the briefing and debriefing. The debriefing, eventually all I had to say, now then, what have you got to tell me? They knew what I wanted to know.
So you could rely on their judgment?
Well, eventually, yes. But, of course, I'd asked them, they did many, many sorties, and they got very experienced in this. And eventually, you know, one after the other coming in, we could follow a column of German movement and check one with the other. If they said, right, we've seen flight said, we've seen tanks moving west. The next briefing, a quarter of an hour later, I'd want to know more about these tanks, but I'd wait and see if they mentioned them and how many, see if it agreed with what the others had seen. So there was this check, and it became very reliable information. And Army headquarters became very enthusiastic about this information because it's just what they needed.
Corroboration.
It was reconnaissance, reports from the air, not from the ground. Much easier to see movement from the air.
What about photographs? Did you examine those? Or
yes, there were photographs, and they were examined and sent. Well, they were, yes, they were actually produced in the wing, and of course sent to the army headquarters.
Oh, so you didn't interpret them yourself?
No, not really, because I was too busy doing the other. Mm. But they went to the intelligence section in the army, and they were the experts there who were used to this. But I'd had...
But you could interpret a photograph.
Yes, I could, yes. Well, I did see them. I did see them, yes. Mm. And it was interesting to actually say, yes, they reported that yesterday, and that's where we bombed.
How long were you on your own? And presumably you got someone to help you, or a staff to...
No, I was... while I was with the South Africans, I was on my own.
The whole time?
The whole time, yes. But... I would think this was, what, a couple of months. And then... yes, we used the South African communications and I didn't have any wireless vehicles or anything. This was early days.
Yeah. What happened then once you got when you got to Al Alamein? Did things change when the front was stabilised?
Well, we settled down, yes, and I was still with the South Africans, and then, of course, we were doing more useful work because we were able to give them definite targets. We knew where the Germans were. The bombing of this with the Bostons was not close to our troops. Not very close. It was mainly concentrated on their supply line. The Germans were also using the main road. Well, that was the opportunity there to send the bombers and stop their vehicles supplying them.
So your attack was mainly on their logistics?
It was really, yes, with the Bostons. Mm. And also, yes, well, we did actually bomb the nearest airstrips as the Germans moved forward, you know, with the Air Force. It was very important to maintain, or to get and maintain, air superiority. That was absolutely vital. And then the Germans wouldn't know what we were doing at El Alamein. It was nearly the time for Montgomery to arrive. But before that, I'll just mention that we'd had three army commanders within the space of few weeks during the retreat. General Ritchie was replaced by General Gott, but unfortunately, a few days after General Gott had been appointed, he was flying and he was shot down and killed. Now, this meant that very quickly another army commander should be brought as soon as possible, because there was now a vital period of preparation to stop the Germans going any further past El Alamein, because if they did, they wouldn't have very much difficulty in getting to Cairo, which would be extremely serious. I think the next big event was that Churchill arrived, talked to the troops, whose morale was rock bottom because we'd continued to have defeats and got no victories to boast about. Following Churchill's visit, General Montgomery arrived. Now, there was a change all round because General Auchinleck, who was in charge of the Middle East operations, including the Western Desert, was replaced by General Alexander, and Montgomery was appointed in place of General Gott, who had just been killed. It should be said here that General Auchinleck decided that we would stand at El Alamein. He made the plans for this, and there was to be no further retreat. So this was the situation. General Montgomery took over on arrival.
Did you notice a difference when Montgomery arrived?
Well, when he arrived, there was no difference whatsoever, because we'd whatever general we'd had, we didn't seem to have much success. And after retreating, what was it, between 400 and 500 miles, it's not the greatest boost for confidence. And also we'd lost quite a lot of equipment and manpower, so we're not as strong as we were before. But the first thing General Montgomery did was to call an officers' meeting, all officers. I attended this, and I remember General Montgomery because he was corps commander when we were in England, and he came to tea several times, so I had met him before. Now, I shall never forget his opening remarks. He says, "Now, you've come here to fight. You've come here to stop the Germans going any further. You've come here to forget the name, the word retreat. There'll be no more retreating." He says, "We'll stay here until we're fully strengthened with equipment and manpower, until we are superior to the Germans in front of us. And in the meantime, we'll continue to harass the Germans and his supply lines to stop him getting any stronger." He says, "I already have a plan to start how to do this." And then he told us his plan to let the Germans through our line in our weakest spot near the Ruizat Ridge, the El Alamein gap, near the Katara Depression. Now, we had a 45-mile front here, and this was the southern part of the front. He says, "The Germans, I anticipate, are getting ready to attack us before we get too strong. They'll be as exhausted as we are because they've come a long way. They have suffered some casualties, and lost some equipment, but not as much as we have. Now, he said, I can see that you're concerned that I'm going to let them through our line. But he explained how this was going to be done. He says, I consider that this is where he'll probably attack. He's got the tanks here, tanks there. He's got his seasoned Africa Corps infantry placed fairly well south rather than on the main road and in front of us, where he knows that we have the strength. He says, I've decided that I'm going to encourage him to attack where we want him to attack. Well, I remember looking round and looking at the faces of the officers listening. This seems similar to what we've heard before, but it wasn't. 3 days later, the Germans attacked in this area. He did come through, but Montgomery had our tanks hidden behind a ridge, had just not very much infantry to stop. And they had instructions to just retreat gradually and encourage him to progress. And the next day, the Germans were bombarded. The tanks started up and attacked him. And Rommel lost 80 tanks destroyed. And quickly retreated, and the battle was over. We had light casualties. Well, the morale did go up. Absolutely, that I would think that this is probably the key action of probably the Desert War. I know the El Alamein attack was very important indeed, but this destroyed 80 German tanks and a lot of infantry. But more important, it raised the morale of the 8th Army throughout. There wasn't any doubt about it. We'd got a commander who seemed to know what he was doing.
Did your bombers take any part in this battle when the Germans were lured?
No, the Air Force didn't get involved here, except that there was a bit of a diversion. That was the idea. Germans always thought we would attack further north, you know. Or we wouldn't attack, but defend severely further north. But he got, if you like, a bloody nose, Rommel. And it took him a long time to recover from this. It was a severe blow. It was the first reversal he'd suffered. Everybody had great respect, including Montgomery, for Rommel. He was a magnificent general. And there was no doubt he was going to be difficult to beat. But there was a determination that everybody would support Montgomery. Obviously. You were talking, you know, amongst ourselves. It is obvious that this is great, you know, we're going to beat this fellow. And Well, it was, 3 months later, we did attack him. When we were strong enough, when the Sherman tanks had arrived from America, when we had new anti-tank guns, which would be strong enough to combat the German tanks, and increased artillery. And that was absolutely splendid.
What were you doing while this build-up was going on?
No.
Were you continuing to bomb the German supply
lines? We were... well, I just explained now that it was during this, just shortly after this, I was transferred to Morrow, which was the forward advanced unit for the fighter bombers and medium bombers.
Hadn't you been to Kenya in between times?
No.
You were promoted, no. Yes, to the Mobile Operations Room Unit.
Yeah. I had to report to the air officer commanding the fighter bombers and the medium bombers, which was Wing Commander Lewis. I just mentioned this, that one thing General Montgomery did do, and very